I want to do an episode on the cranks.
On both of them?
Yeah. And that concept is so ridiculous.
He jumps out of a plane to jumpstart his heart. Is that crank one or two?
Yes.
Trick question. It's both.
Are we rolling?
Yes. I'm just going to isolate you saying I've never seen Crank.
I haven't seen Crank or Crank 2 High Voltage. What's up? This is Movies on Up, April 1945. A nation awaits its... I'm awaiting my co-host to say hello, Mr. Ryan.
Hello.
I am Dave. We are Movies on Up. Our tagline for this week, April 1945. A nation awaits its... ellipses. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are correct and we pick you, you will win a glorious, powerful Movies on Up prize package.
Full of ellipses.
Yes. This week, Anthropoid comes out in theaters, unless it gets pushed back, because that's a common occurrence now. Starring Cillian Murphy, Jamie Dornan, and Toby Jones, about some, let's say, Nazi soldiers trying to kill Hitler. Maybe.
Somebody trying to kill Hitler?
Yeah. The poster's red. Assume it's a Nazi movie. So.
Or they could be Russians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, favorite Nazi movies. So,
is that what we're calling it? Favorite Nazi movies?
I guess.
Favorite Nazis in movies?
We'll get to that. This is the first list in 4+ years of doing a podcast that I've accidentally ended up on at least two white power websites.
Accidentally. I accidentally retweeted two white power.
Like, I'm looking and I'm reading through and there's all these articles on like Cinema Blend and all this, and I'm just clicking and I'm clicking, and then I realize I'm reading a forum and I'm reading some of the comments and I'm like, are there no moderators? And then I look at the top, it's like, oh God. So it's like, so FBI, if you're listening, accident. Total. No, I am not voting Trump. I guarantee it. But yeah, this is an episode we could probably just as likely do in November if we wanted to, but we're going to do it now. So favorite Nazi movies. How did you go about your list?
To be honest with you, I knew that this was the list that I had to come up with. And Nazis, at first it sounds like it's going to be tough. And then when you really start thinking about it, basically any World War II movie, not any, a lot of them have Nazis in them because they were a part of World War II. So once I kind of got in that headspace, I was able to find a lot of movies that I like. I went with some that we haven't really talked about on the show. I like them. I think they're all very, very good. For the most part, you could rearrange the order and I wouldn't have a giant problem. It turns out there's a lot of movies that I enjoy that do have Nazis in them.
See, I
don't know what that says about me.
I had to take it a little bit of a different way because I don't watch a lot of war movies. I don't like a lot of war movies.
I would say.
So as I'm going through the
obvious. There's only one movie on my list that's a war movie.
Yeah, see, as I go through a bunch of World War II movies, like, obviously I reached for a couple. I tried to modernize my list a little bit, and I didn't limit it to just Nazis.
Right.
I thought neo-Nazis.
Yes.
So I thought, okay, they all hate the same people. So minor favorite movies featuring Nazis or neo-Nazis, which I probably like more featuring, not that I support either mindset,
FBI,
but, I do like more of the neo-Nazi ones. I came up with a handful, and I have a handful. It's about a mix. I thought it'd be, once I decided, like, okay, I'll do neo-Nazis, like, I thought my whole list would be neo-Nazis. It's about a mix, and even with my also-rans.
No, there's no mixing. It's all.
It's all.
Or the other.
All the same. It's all one or the other. Enough about that. Your number one, your
number five
favorite. Who's your favorite? Who's your fifth favorite Nazi?
Goebbels. No, although he does make an appearance in my list. My number five is from 1963. I guess my fifth favorite Nazi would be the Commandant. From John Sturges' The Great Escape, starring Steve McQueen, James Garner, Chuck Bronson, and basically like every like manly man of that era. Despite Nazis actually being like a real group of folks, it's my only movie that's actually based on real events. It was adapted from Paul Brickhill's novel of the same name. Like I said, it's a tremendous cast that's put to great use by Sturges, who was a great Western director. He did The Magnificent Seven. He kind of turned into a great World War II director. The 50s is where he started with the Westerns, and then as the 60s kind of rolled around, he went more towards the WWII. This movie, I think, has a couple of very distinct personalities. The first half of the movie plays a little comedic. Even the score is kind of bouncy and it's kind of pleasant. There's all types of hijinks as the prisoners kind of formulate their plans to escape and get into all sorts of monkey shines, as many as can be expected in a German prison camp. You have Steve McQueen's Hiltz tries to stick to much simpler plans, trying to escape, and they don't seem to work. He gets caught every time. So it's kind of a feel-good Trapped by Nazis movie. The second half, not so much. It gets a lot more tense. The idea in the story was to break out all 200-some prisoners in this prison camp. And I think they managed to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 actually out when the Germans begin their chase. And if there's one thing the Nazis are famous for, it is their understanding. So things kind of take a turn once they start to catch some of the prisoners. It's not quite the happy-go-lucky movie that it started out being, and it doesn't exactly end on what I would call a really high note, but I think it's a good escape movie. I don't know that that's a real big genre, you know, like a prison break movie, I guess. This is sort of the same thing, just set in a prison camp and not like, you know, the Birdman of Alcatraz or anything like that.
My number five is legit Nazis. It does go back to World War II. It's a Best Picture winner, I believe, from 1997. Roberto Benigni's Life is Beautiful.
It is.
Yeah.
Multiple.
I know he won Best Actor, I believe.
And he won Best Director, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it swept. This movie, it's a tough one. It's feel-goody watching his performance, but not given the circumstances. Him and his son are taken away, because that's what the Nazis tended to do with Jewish people. And it's just him trying to shut it all out and try to convince his son that everything's going to be all right, even though everything is leading to the obvious that no, it's not going to be all right. So it's very touching and very, his performance is pretty phenomenal in this. It's a World War II movie, but it's not really a war movie. It's just his time.
It takes place during World War II.
Yeah, it's his time in the concentration camp trying to be a dad, and it's really touching, and it's a really hard story. He manages to bring so much joy to this tough of a story as he tries to convey that joy to his son, and it's really a wonderful put-together movie, because it deserves all the praise it got, because it is touching, it's funny, it's heartwarming, but it rips your heart out at the same time, so that's my number five, and it has real Nazis.
My number four has neo-Nazis, and it is the movie where the lead lost the Oscar to Roberto Benigni. It is Tony Kane's American History X, starring the aforementioned Edward Norton, Edward Furlong, the Eddies, and Fairuza Balk. If you thought my last movie had a little bit of a bummer ending, and unless you've seen it, you're just going to have to take my word for it. It kind of does. This one is right up there as well. Obviously, being nominated for an Oscar kind of leads you to believe that Edward Norton was great in this movie. It is 100% his movie, but by now, I kind of think that we're used to seeing Edward Norton be tremendous. So saying, oh, Edward Norton was great in this, then it was maybe a bigger statement, but now it's kind of like, well, of course, because that's what he does.
Even now, though, I think it stands out. Like, I think even now, yes, almost 20 years later, like, you think of Norton performances, I feel like this stands out. I feel like this is his Fight Club almost. Like, you think of Brad Pitt, like,
right,
one of the first things people are going to think of is, despite the amazing career, is going to be Fight Club almost 20 years ago. But this is Norton's that, as great as he is.
This is Edward Norton's Fight Club.
Yes. Not as friendly. His Fight Club has a little bit more mean spirit behind it.
Yeah, a little bit. What we're not used to seeing, though, is Edward Furlong and Fairuza Balk turning in really good performances. Even Mrs. Griswold herself, Beverly D'Angelo, is in this, and she's actually pretty competent. I think the most astounding thing about this movie is that these performances, the Edwards, Fairuza Balk, they were captured by a music video director who's probably more famous for directing the Soul Asylum Runaway Train video and Danny California, with a couple Johnny Cash ones in the mix, than he is famous for being a movie director. As a matter of fact, Tony Kane tried to get his name taken off of American History X because he wasn't happy with the way the movie came out. I'd be interesting to know, to see the director's cut of that movie. If this is the shitty version, I'd love to see the good version. Kane hasn't really made much since then. He did a doc called Lake of Fire that took about 20 years to make.
Detachment with Brody a couple years ago.
Well, he had an unfinished project from 2010, and then Detachment was from 2011. As of January, he's supposedly still working on a movie with Shia and maybe Alec Baldwin, I think. But if he never makes another movie, he started out pretty strong with a Nazi, a neo-Nazi.
I think Eddie Furlong is terrible in this movie. I hate really? Eddie Furlong in this movie. I mean, as good as this movie is, he brings it down for me every time. And, like, I'm so happy with that ending. But just like...
when they recast the parts.
Move that earlier, and you have an even better movie. My number four, also neo-Nazis as opposed to World War II. In a different universe, this could be kind of a prequel to American History X. It is from 2006, from Shane Meadows' This Is England. You have a young British kid who doesn't really have anywhere to go, doesn't really have any friends, until a gang of skinheads and neo-Nazis kind of take him in and teach him what family and friendship and brotherhood and bonding is. And it's just this kid growing up in that atmosphere and what it does to his other family, his real family and his real friends that, you know, he maybe didn't realize he had until now. He has this real friendship with these guys who, they don't care about his friendship, they care about the movement, and befriending him is adding one to the movement. Between this and Dead Man's Shoes, Shane Meadows was one of those directors when this came out that's like, oh my god, like, this dude is gonna have an awesome career. He hasn't done a lot of movies. This Is England has spun off into a few, I believe, mini series over in the UK, but this movie, it's brutal, it's violent, it's real. It's scary because people like this exist, and people like this prey on young, awkward kids that don't... You're not born to hate people as much as a neo-Nazi does. That's taught. And
they say you have to learn hate. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have these...
I don't know who they are, but somebody...
You have these people that prey on young, awkward kids that they can mold and shape and make them believe anything they want. And This Is England does a really good job of displaying that, and it's very, very terrifying.
My number three features a Nazi that you mentioned, Joseph Goebbels. It is from 2009. It is a neo movie about old school Nazis. It is Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds, starring Brad Pitt, Christoph Waltz, and Mikey Fassbender. This is not necessarily one of my favorite Tarantino movies, but the first 20 minutes I think are excellent. They're so good, I kind of didn't have to bat an eye putting this above American History X. When we first meet Waltz in this movie, pretty much literally and figuratively, I had not really seen him in anything before Inglourious Basterds, and he's one of the first people you see in the movie. His Colonel Landa is attempting to ferret out this Jewish family that's hiding in the French countryside. We know, as the viewer, that the family is hiding under the floor, and the way that Landa turns the screws, it makes the scene get progressively so much more tense. Watching it, you've kind of got the same flop sweat that the farmer has sitting across from Landa, trying to do his best to feign ignorance, and, I really don't know where that family is, knowing that he's got them literally right under his feet. And if the Germans were to find them, it's not going to go well for anyone. Just watching the dichotomy there, the tension on the farmer's face, and sort of just this casual smirk that Waltz has. Literally, you watch him in that first 20 minutes smirk his way to an Academy Award. The rest of the movie, I think, becomes a bit of an alt-history, over-the-top revenge plot. But the first scene is excellent. It's simple, it's terrifying, and it's real. Realness isn't necessarily something that we always get in a Tarantino movie. They all feel like they take place in his universe. It's Tarantino's reality. And that's certainly true for the rest of Bastards. But Chapter One, I think, feels like a story that could have and very well may have happened exactly that way in hundreds of times in 1941.
My number three, going back to neo-Nazis, to 2001, it's possibly inspired by American History X. It's The Believer, written and directed by Henry Bean. I believe it's the first movie I ever saw Ryan Gosling in. Ryan Gosling plays this young Jewish kid who grows this fierce hatred for Jews, inspired by a true story of a Jewish KKK member. So it's just, it's Henry Bean's take. And I mean, he wrote some darker movies in the 90s, like Deep Cover and Internal Affairs. So this is him writing and directing. And I remember watching it and being blown away by the lead, which turned out to be Ryan Gosling, who went on to have a pretty decent career. And Summer Phoenix is like the female lead, who I thought was going to have an awesome career because she's really, really good. She petered out like a year or two later, and really stopped making movies. But it's just such a fascinating movie because you have American History X, where he did what he did to get him there, and he believed what he believed, and that's what put him where he got. And, you know, his beliefs changed. And in a way, you have Ryan Gosling in the same way, where you're raised one way, but now you're growing to hate what
you're maybe not changing for the better in this.
Yeah,
instance.
Yeah. You're growing to hate something, but realizing that that's what you've always been, and all the people around you, that's what they've always been. So it's a weird conflict of what world do you want to live in, the world that you grew up in, or the world that hates the world you grew up in. And Gosling was so young and fresh, and it was, at the time, like, it might be weird now to watch because you're watching a Gosling movie. At the time, you didn't have that. Because, like I said, I don't think I'd seen... I knew he was the young Hercules kid, but I don't think I'd seen him in any other movie when I did watch this when it came out. You know, you have this kid that just brings it. You watch this, and it's like, okay, I could understand why he's still headlining movies 15 years later, because there's so
like
much...
Like Eddie Furlong in American History X.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish they'd have killed Eddie Furlong in this movie, too, just to get that taste out of my mouth. It's such a good movie, and I wish we'd have seen more out of Henry Bean. He directed that Noise, that movie where Tim Robbins went nuts a few years later, but nothing since. But yeah, Ryan Gosling, if you want to see a great Gosling performance from early, and check out the Phoenix daughter, Summer Phoenix, she's fantastic in it as well.
My number two is from 1981, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Harrison Ford and Karen Allen. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. I feel like the opening scene from Raiders might be, without hyperbole, the greatest introduction to a character in movie history. It perfectly encapsulates everything about the character of Indiana Jones, who's been slinging that whip for the last 35 years, and essentially, we learned everything we'd ever need to know about him in the first 10 minutes of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Nazis specifically are among some of the worst human beings ever, so it's not really a surprise that they are sort of the default bad guys in many, many, many movies. But in addition to being awful, they also, and by they, I kind of mean Hitler, had this comically weird schemes in plan to get these super weapons that would allow him to win the war. He was obsessed with the occult and spent a ton of resources looking for things like the Holy Grail. Indy 3, I'm looking at you. And probably even the Ark of the Covenant. So actually having done stuff like this, I think makes the movie way out there, sort of, but still kind of grounded in reality. Now, there was no Indiana Jones chasing the SS around trying to beat them to the Ark of the Covenant or to the Holy Grail. But the real Nazis were out doing shit like that. Technically, from the technical standpoints, I think it is a phenomenal movie. I think it was nominated for like 8 Oscars, and it won at least 4 for sound editing and things like that. And I couldn't tell you what's a great movie for sound editing, but if you say Indiana Jones and I say a punch, you know exactly what it sounds like when he punches one of them Nazis right in the mush. So I think that might be kind of an instance where sound editing is good in a movie, when you can pick up on a sound effect like that and it becomes classic. They have a classic score from John Williams. I mean, all the way around, it's probably the most fun movie I've ever seen with Nazis. Good adventure movie. That Han Solo guy did a pretty fair job in it.
Those made my also-rans. On my also-rans, I actually have Indiana Jones movies. I was thinking Last Crusade because they're more one-to-one with them, racing to the Holy Grail. Right. Any of them work. My number two...
I just like the first one better.
No, they're all... I
Temple
like,
of Doom, not heavy on the Nazis.
No, not heavy on the
Nazis.
On Nazis. One and three, heavy on Nazis. Right. I like three. I know a lot of people don't like it as much, but the first one, I think, is... Between that and Temple are the best.
Yeah.
After the fourth one, obviously.
Right.
My number two, back to neo-Nazis, it's a movie from this year, which I'm sure I'll be talking about at the end of this year.
Good. I'm glad. I had this as an also-ran, and I was like, please don't forget to mention it.
Yeah, it's Jeremy Saulnier's Green Room, starring Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Alia Shakwat, Mark Webber. It's a slow burn at start.
Patrick Stewart, the
neo-Nazi.
Yes,
Patrick Stewart. It starts off slow where, you know, Anton Yelchin, Alia Shakwat, they're in a band. They're promised a bigger show.
Punk band.
It falls through. The kid that has it fall through is able to throw them on a show that his cousin does. It turns out that's at a bar ran and operated and frequented by neo-Nazis. And they see some stuff they shouldn't have. And it starts off trying to be peaceful, and then it picks up. Saulnier, his career has been awesome. Murder Party was his first feature, which I think an under the radar.
It's out there, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an under the radar horror movie. Like, I think your diehard horror fans have high opinions of it. It never really hit the mainstream. It's just a fun, insane movie. And then he really broke out with Blue Ruin last year. Or 2013,
I think it was.
Was 13 or 14. Blue Ruin was amazing. I believe it's still on Netflix if you haven't seen Blue Ruin. And then next on the Color
2013.
Wheel. 2013. Yeah, next on the Color Wheel was Green Room. And it's really good because it does deal with modern neo-Nazis just in their setting, to where this is their bar. If you're one of them, you're welcome. These guys, they play the music that they listen to, but their ideals aren't really there.
Play your older stuff.
Yeah, that's a good line. They have a Nazi, what is that, Nazi punk fuck you or whatever the opening track they come out with, mm-hmm. to kind of set the tone that, like, hey, we're playing this show, but we don't necessarily agree with what you stand for, but we're here for a paycheck. And maybe not the best approach, but it was just cool how, you know, you have Patrick Stewart, who's this older neo-Nazi, owns the bar. You have all these guys trying to work their way up. You have the Red Laces.
Yeah.
And how it is a gang. It's a community where they all have the same ideals, but you have to escalate yourself.
There was a hierarchy there.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like every neo-Nazi was the same.
Yeah. Get
they
yourself,
were like the Red Laces.
You and four Red Laces, nobody else. Like,
yeah.
And it was just they're willing to do whatever for the cause. And it's just such a damn good movie. And I don't think we've mentioned on the show, because we haven't really had a thing. I've always loved Anton Yelchin. He was on the show Huff on Showtime years ago with Hank Azaria. I kind of fell in love with him there because he had some really heavy stuff to deal with. The Beaver, Charlie Bartlett was one of his more mainstream ones, but Odd Thomas was one that I think we've discussed.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
It's not a good movie, but he's good to watch. And he, other than the Star Treks, really avoided making big-time movies.
Fright Night,
yeah. He did do that one, too.
Well, I'm not saying that was a big-time movie, but that was another one I think we both really like.
Yeah, he's really good in that. And, I mean, he's one of those that no matter what, he didn't really make a lot of bad movies.
Right.
And even the movies that aren't that great, he's really, really good in. And watching Green Room, it depresses me because I've always loved his career and loved to see where he took it. I put him almost up there with Ben Foster, whereas, like, somebody I've been watching since they were, like, a teen. And they haven't gone the route of just, I mean, it's hard to say that about Yelchin because he is in the Star Trek movies. But he could have been in a lot of bigger movies, and he just never was. And he made movies he wanted to make, and this is one of his better performances. He's really, really good in this movie. Like, he's so amazing to watch. And actors die all the time, and it doesn't always choke me up to watch them, but, like, I think him and Gandolfini are two that, like, when I watch them now, it's like, fuck this world that we don't get more of these guys, because that's, it's so unfair. Like, those two, I do put him in that category with Gandolfini, because I feel like I never felt like I was watching James Gandolfini. I don't feel like I'm watching Anton Yelchin. Like, you're watching them act, and they're so just, and same with Ben Foster. He's still alive, though. You're watching this performance, and I think Green Room is one of his better ones, and it's a shame that it's one of the last ones we get.
Yeah, it was tough. It took me a long time to get to see Green Room. I had to wait till it came out on DVD. And I saw that, and then a couple weeks later, I saw Star Trek. So it's like, you know, the guy's been dead for, at that point, it was like a month, month and a half. Then you see two movies, and he has a big role in the new Star Trek.
Because he's been in the last two, but yeah. Not like major.
Yeah, I mean, they focused on him. He's with Captain Kirk for most of the movie, and he's really good in it. And it's kind of a bummer knowing that you're not going to get, yeah, the guy died, which is the real tragedy. But from, I guess, a selfish perspective, sucks that we're not going to get to see any of his movies, because they were really good. And
he just gets better as he gets older.
He
was such a good kid actor, and he just gets better and better. And it's like a reverse Fanning, like a reverse Dakota, which I don't know if that makes sense until a couple weeks from now or not. But this movie, though, I mean, we hadn't talked on Yelchin, and I felt like
it was a good time, yeah.
Bad, because he was one of my favorite actors, and to see him in this, I think it'll be in my top 10 at the end of the year, because it's really, really good. You got to get there. Like, it is a slower burn at the start, right. But once it picks up, it's intense. And stuff.
That's a good way to describe it.
Oh, it's intense. It's a thriller.
You're going to see some things in that movie.
Yeah. And it's, whereas, like, Murder Party, there's some stuff thrown in. It's Murder Party. You know, it's a Murder Party.
Right.
Blue Ruin, it's a revenge film. You know that's what his purpose is.
But that goes really far, too.
That goes really, really far. But this, I feel like stuff happens and you don't really see it coming.
Yes.
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 Yeah. And it's really, really good. And it's one of those, I like when a director can just say, like, I don't care who's in it. Like, I'm killing people. Like, yes. I don't care who's in it. Death happens. It's not ceremonious all the time. I like that. Not a lot of directors have the balls to spend an hour and 20 minutes with this character, and then they're dead, and then you're on to the next scene.
Right.
I don't think that spoils anything, because it happens like four times in this movie. But
a lot of people get killed in this movie.
Imogen Poots is good in it. The final scene of them together, I don't want to spoil the movie. The final scene with Poots and Yelchin together.
They are among the last to die.
Yeah. Those two together... That final scene, it just...
Her line's really funny.
Yeah, and him coming full circle as a character, it's such... I spent way too much time on my number two, but...
It's a good movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
My number one, people do get shot in this movie, but it's significantly less gory. It is Michael Kurtz's 1943 classic, no other way to describe it, Casablanca, starring Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, and Claude Rains. I am unashamed to say that I love this movie. It is set in World War II and does feature some light French resistance, but I wouldn't call this a war movie. It is a romantic drama all the way. Pretty formulaic. You know, it's guy gets girl, guy goes to prison camp, and girl thinks he's dead. Guy gets girl back after she leaves her new boyfriend upon hearing he's alive. All the way up to guy tries to buy stolen Nazi documents from girl's ex-boyfriend. Totally standard stuff, but not the standard romantic lead performance from Bogart. He's a bitter drunk when we meet him, and somehow manages to incrementally get less bitter, but perhaps not less drunk throughout the entirety of the movie, and manages to do the right thing throughout for a guy that at the beginning of the movie says he doesn't stick his neck out for anyone, to doing just the opposite of that at the end of the movie and waltzing off into the fog to join the French resistance. So many of the World War II movies that I've seen were made after the war was over. This one, at least for me, is kind of unique in that it came out just about 2 years after the U.S. entered the war. it's not about the grand battles of World War II or about stealing a magical artifact. It's really just about trying to sneak out of a German-controlled territory and get to freedom. It's not really about do this thing so that we can win the war, capture this bridge, blow up this plant or whatever, kill this general so that we can win the war. It's about do this thing so that we can rally some more support to the cause and make ourselves a little bit more safe, which I guess if you weren't in the armed forces, which no one is technically actively in the armed forces in this movie, they're resistance fighters or they're loosely associated or former resistance fighters. Really, their big priority was not trying to necessarily win the war. It was to try and stay safe so that they could manage to maybe continue the fight somewhere else. And that was the important thing. It's just as important as, you know, taking a strategic bridge or storming the beach at Normandy, but just on a, I guess, a more intimate scale. And the fact that it did involve kind of a love story, there were other things going on during the war. You know, people were falling in love. People were falling out of love. And I think that this is just an excellent example of a story like that set in a very unique time and place.
Whereas yours came out 2 years after declaring war, mine takes place a few years before the U.S. declared World War II. It takes place in 1930s, where a young Air Force pilot finds a jetpack invented by Howard Hughes in 1991's The Rocketeer, directed by Joe Johnston. It is pre-World War II, technically, but you have Nazi spies over here trying to gain intelligence and trying to do anything they can to help Hitler and his rise. And yeah, Billy Campbell is just pilot who lucks into finding this jetpack and decides to become the Rocketeer. This is an awesome movie. Like, it was from 91. It's 25 years old. It's awesome. Like, even now, like, this is on TV all the time. I watch it every time. Billy Campbell's really good as this lead, that this kind of in over his head hero. You know, he's not Captain America. He's not this swashbuckling just hero. Like, he has to grow into a hero. Jennifer Connelly is the love interest, who's phenomenal in this movie. You have James Bond, Timothy Dalton as the villain, Alan Arkin, Paul Sorvino, Terry O'Quinn all have parts. This is when Joe Johnston's at his best. I wanted my number one and number two to be two Joe Johnston movies, but with putting Rocketeer number one, I couldn't justify putting Captain America First Avenger on my list. It was close, but I wanted to talk about something else instead. It's just such a fun movie, and the timing of this episode is awesome because just a few weeks ago they announced a sequel in the works. It takes place about 3 or 4 years later, called The Rocketeers, which I don't think Johnston's back to direct, which is a mistake, but if they can carry the same feel and tone of this movie, I'm all for it, because it's just fun. This is way before the superhero boom. Predates it by 10 years. Like, this is right after Batman, a couple years after Batman.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you had your Superman and your Batman already, but it certainly predates what we have now.
Yeah, and I mean, you're not going to compare it to Batman in many circles, because you have this dark brooding, and then you have just this fun. And what Joe Johnston did, and he did it in Captain America 1 also, is you create this world. Like, you take you there. Like, it feels like 1930s Hollywood. It feels like you're adapting a pulp comic from that time period. It's so much fun. Total blast. And I hope they nail the sequel. I am all for it. I absolutely love this movie. And it's one of my favorite movies about fighting Nazis. What are some of your also-rans?
Green Room was certainly one. I really, really like The First Avenger. It's one of my favorite Marvel movies to date, and perhaps my favorite of the standalone ones.
Oh, see, it's one of my favorite Marvel movies, but still my third favorite Captain America movie, which says a lot about that franchise.
Right, like, yeah.
It's a top five Marvel movie, only a top three Captain America movie.
I thought Fury was pretty good, the tank movie, also with Brad Pitt. The Good German is a movie that I mentioned a while ago. I think it was like I don't know what the hell list I would have put The Good German on, because it would have been a natural for this list. Valkyrie, I think, was not bad with Tom Cruise and the plot to kill Hitler.
But with McQuarrie and Singer, I think expectations are high.
Right.
It didn't meet those.
It did not.
And Tom Cruise is just lack of that.
He made a very odd German.
When it comes to a period movie like that, or a movie that takes place somewhere else, if you don't want to commit to doing it in German, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Don't do German accents, especially if everybody's doing a German accent except your main dude. If Tom Cruise doesn't want to do German, nobody does German. You're not speaking in German. It's not a historical representation because they would be speaking German. I don't need the German accents, especially if everybody but one
right,
is doing
the main guy. It kind of takes
which
you
that
out of
takes
it.
You out of the movie.
Yeah, I also, for what it's worth, I enjoyed that Iron Sky movie where the Nazis came back from their secret moon base. It's campy, but I thought it was fun. And there's a sequel.
Yeah, but Dead Snow.
Yeah.
Could have come
the
up.
The first one I liked.
Yeah, the second one was so bad.
It was rough.
Dead Snow, I just thought of when you said Iron Sky. Speaking of Bryan Singer, Apt Pupil.
Yeah.
I thought was decent. I think he covered everything. I had American History X, Valkyrie, Indy Jones, Captain America. And then a Nazi movie that I don't think a lot of people have seen, but I guarantee almost everybody has seen one specific scene from, even if it's not the dialogue from the movie, Downfall. It's a Nazi movie where if you've ever seen a clip online of Hitler telling people to clear the room and complaining about anything, that is from the movie Downfall. Sadly, that's the most famous thing about that movie is that scene that people have just turned into whatever it wants to be. That's mine. Those are mine.
Those are your five favorite Nazi movies?
Yeah.
Five favorite movies starring Nazis, featuring Nazis.
Neo-Nazis, Anton Yelchin, any of that stuff.
Next week, I suppose it's a little bit lighter fare. We go from Nazis to kind of a kids movie, but not really a kids movie.
Lighter fare means like, oh, light episode. No, still dark.
Yeah, it's Coraline. Kubo and the Two Strings will be out next week. So we're taking a look at another movie by that studio, Coraline. So a lot less death and a lot less hate next week and 100% more stop motion.
Until then.
Keep it up. For a half a second, I was like, man, I wonder if I could say keep it up, Alf Deutsch. But I really got
it. Eschkapen.
No.
Oppen.
No, I don't think so.
Ich lieben meinen Taschenrechner.
Ich bin ein.
That is, I love my calculator. That's legit German.
Yeah.
Two years of German. That's all I know.
I had three in high school, and I took two semesters in college, and I am in trouble.